May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
Good afternoon, and welcome to Attention, Please. KPTZ broadcast Attention, Please, which is a blend of news and public affairs, and it brings you information celebrating this fine community in which we live. I'm Phil Andrus. We have two topics for this week's show, and more than two guests. In fact, we have three guests. Joining me for Olympic Neighbors is Executive Director Claudia Coppola. Olympic Neighbors operates Hamilton House, a licensed adult family home for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Jefferson County. The occasion for this conversation with Claudia is their upcoming Porch Fest. After we say goodbye to Claudia, I'm going to welcome Xinyi Pai, civic poet for the city of Seattle, and Catherine Hunt, who is in the studio with me. Xinyi is on Zoom with me, by the way. She is the curator of poetry on the Salish Sea, in which Xinyi will speak on September 10th. But first, we're going to talk to Claudia Coppola, and she, in fact, has unmuted herself. We're all on Zoom here. Well, actually, Catherine's not. She's to my left. Claudia, hello.
Hello.
Hi, again.
Phil.
From what I see on the Porch Fest website, which is pretty fat and informative, you've grown the festival this year. Once again, you've grown the festival. Tell me what's to be expected and when it is, and where it is, for that matter.
Sure. This is the second year that we're hosting Porch Fest. It's kind of funny because it's not actually involving any porches this year. Last year, we did it in a neighborhood, which was pretty sweet, and we had multiple bands playing in yards and driveways, but we found that permitting and parking was a little bit of an issue for us. So we moved over to the fairgrounds this year. So Porch Fest is going to be on September 3rd, which is Sunday coming up, at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay, and tell me, you know, you have entertainment, you have food, I believe you have beverages. So we have a minute or so for you to entice people to come to your event with food, entertainment, and beverages.
Sure. We've got bands, Lowwire, Cosmophonics, Abbey Cats, Shoestrings, Slow Burn, Sarah Sunrose, and Jerry Canody and Bobby Nichols are playing at various times on various stages. We've got a couple food trucks. As Phil mentioned, we have a beer and wine garden. For the kids, we've got a bounce house, face painting, games, petting goats. There's also a silent auction with about 60 items from local vendors and shops, and a cash raffle with a $1,000 prize.
Claudia, what's this money for? Are you going to raise, we anticipate a small fortune, but that money is well needed, and tell us what it's needed for.
The proceeds from this event go to help cover the costs for Olympic Neighbors to run our adult family home. We're currently the only home serving solely people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Jefferson County, despite there being a really great need for this service. Our goal is to raise $35,000 this year. We raised about $30,000 last year, and we're already about a quarter of a way to hitting our goal.
So you're pretty optimistic, I meant to say, pretty optimistic. One more time, the date, the place, and some mention of what people are going to experience when they come to Porch Fest, besides there not being a porch, of course. It's an entire fairground. It's a fairgrounds fest at this point.
So again, the date is Sunday, September 3rd at the fairgrounds from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Tickets are $25. Children 12 and under get in for free. It's going to be an exciting day of music and dancing and food, some drinks, lots of different activities, and it's all for a really wonderful cause.
Claudia, thank you for the good work that you do. And also, thank you for joining me on Attention, Please. I almost said Cats in Our Laps, but that's a different show, and that would have been kind of silly. Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you.
Have a good afternoon. Now on to Xinyi Pai and Catherine Hunt and poetry on the Salish Sea and other matters related to that. My thanks first to Anne Murphy, who found me in the Boat Haven of all places, or maybe just saw me in the Boat Haven and buttonholed me, as people used to do in politics, and nudged me to do what I would have wanted to do anyway, but didn't know, interview Xinyi Pai, who is on the Zoom. Maybe we can unmute Xinyi. We have done so. And we don't have to worry about unmuting Catherine Hunt because I have control. Hello, Catherine.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Good to be with you again.
And good afternoon, Xinyi.
Good afternoon.
Hey, nice to meet you. Nice to see you. We've been bouncing emails back and forth, and they've had sometimes unfortunate destinations into the oblivion of a computer that I once had and now have no longer. So we're talking a bit about poetry on the Salish Sea, but a lot about Xinyi. And she is, well, I have some things to say. She is the civic poet of Seattle for this year and next, the author of 12 books of poetry, most recently Virga and No Neutral this year, No Neutral, end of statement, this year, both on Empty Bowl Press. She is the recipient of awards from the City of Seattle Art Office of Arts and Culture, an award from For Culture, which I don't know a thing about, and the Awesome Foundation, which sounds pretty awesome. Her work has appeared in publications throughout the United States, Japan, China, Taiwan, the United Kingdom, and Canada. Xinyi is the writer, host, and producer of 10,000 Things, a podcast on Asian American stories for KUOW in Seattle. And Xinyi, could we start with a poem first? And then we're going to talk about your podcast because we are siblings in radio, I think.
Sure, I'd be happy to read a poem. So this is a piece from my new book, No Neutral. And it's a piece that actually was inspired by a piece of public art at Fort Worden that was created by Richard Turner with Sam Hamill's poetry. That piece is called Memories Vault, and it's in Fort Worden. So this is Monuments for Men, Memories Vault, Fort Worden. I can't deny that beauty is here. When bullied by design, to turn my back to salt water and enthrone myself beneath the shelter to face a single pale stone enshrined within a slab mausoleum. The permanence of rock as persistent as the force of men. It's evident in the words etched onto stone steles, hostile architectures crafted by those who saw themselves like gods, who coerce the eyes upward to poles planted at the sight. That old trope of the man and his lover, the sea, patiently waiting for his return. I think, why not turn the gaze back to her right now, the sea? We have already seen enough of all that's man-made.
Xinyi, thank you for reading that poem. I have this image that you wrote it while there on site, but I would imagine that was not the case.
No, I actually come to Port Townsend quite a bit and have had a couple of residencies at Centrum in the past. And I think I wrote Memories Vault probably last summer or the time before when I was visiting the grounds of Fort Worden.
Okay, well, I'm good to hear that you come to Port Townsend often. You're invited and perhaps you just come for the fun of it. You are a podcast creator, and to me, as I said, I don't know if you heard me say this, it makes us sort of siblings in radio. I feel a kinship to anybody that dabbles in radio, podcast, or live like this is. Tell me about your podcast.
Yes, 10,000 Things is a series of Asian American stories that are told through the lens of personal objects and artifacts that are owned by the individuals that I interview, who are often artists, community leaders, activists, a whole lot of artists, actually. So we just finished up our second season earlier this spring, summer. And it's a podcast that focused a lot on Northwest artists like Etsuko Ichikawa. Tomo Nakayama wrote the music for it and was a guest during the first season. We're hoping to produce a third season that would potentially start publishing next year. And it's just a project, a passion project that started for me during the pandemic in 2021 with the rise of anti-Asian hate crime that was happening across the country. I really felt an urgent need for more positive images and stories about Asian Americans in the media. It was something that I really needed to, I think, make it through that time. And so it is a series that is very much about the notion of creating belonging and space for stories that may not be commonly told. And the story series, the podcast, is also about I think presenting and modeling that there is more than one way to be Asian for a very long time. You know, Asian Americans have sort of been subject to this model minority stereotype that was created, you know, in the 1980s, 1990s. And there are just many other ways to express and represent Asian American experience and stories and voices.
Interesting what you say about the 80s and 90s. And I actually don't quite understand what you did and what you mean by that. And I guess what I'll have to say is amplify the comment a bit. When I think of stereotypes, it goes to restaurants in Chinatown, not to whatever you said in the 80s and the 90s. There's more than one stereotype.
There is more than one stereotype. Yes, certainly. Asian Americans as working class laborers, the stereotypes are very pervasive about Asian American women and their sexuality or their exoticism. And as for the model minority stereotype, that really came about during a period of time, I would say, in like the 1980s and 1990s, when I think, you know, there was really the need, society, I think, felt the need to elevate one minority group as if they could be an example to other minority groups in terms of their successes, their sort of economic contributions to society. And a lot of that was focused, especially during the Reagan era, on the sort of success of Asian Americans within a particular success frame of like a high number of immigrant children, Asian American children in certain fields like medicine, law, engineering, hyper-professional, and that this particular minority stereotype about what Asian Americans are, which is a very monolithic group in the way that Native Americans are, you know, a very diverse group, this kind of stereotype about all Asian Americans was very damaging in creating a kind of wedge minority between whites and African Americans, and then creating these tensions as if one minority group could ascend and serve as sort of a model for other minority groups that may have had different economic opportunities and experiences.
That's an awkward position into which you would find yourself then, and I understand what you mean. Okay, well, I look at the clock. The darn clock just oppresses me sometimes. How about you read another poem, please?
Okay.
Read another poem, and then I'm going to ask you about your role as civic poet. I have 6 pages of notes, Xinyi, which is about as ridiculous. I mean, I cannot tell you how much time I spent wasting my time making lots of notes for a 30-minute conversation, which is 20 minutes long. Please read a poem.
Okay, so this poem is about a Port Townsend poet, Norman Schaefer, who is a friend. We've published together. We've published with the same press, La Alameda Press, out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I have such deep respect and love for Norman's work. Visiting with Norman. He took me out back to see the thinned out shelves in his writing shack, weeded down to a minimum. So much of it gone already to the archive at the college in his hometown. Still, there's something of interest for a reader, a shelf given over to Snyder, first edition copies of Ginsberg and Philip Whalen, along with rows of mountain field guides of the Sierra Nevada and other mountain ranges, in plastic sleeves printed broadsides and small treasures, rubber banded together with a beige elastic and yellow post-it note scrawled in ballpoint pen. N.S. 5 vital books. Non-archival, I thought, while examining the paperback spines of Thoreau, Rex Roth, and Sappho, deciphered by Mary Barnard. The poet has made it easy for anyone to stroll through and see what to keep. From boxes of unsold titles of his own, he invited me to take as much as I wanted. The unclaimed orphans inspiring a tenderness, though I stopped short of more than I could carry in one hand. His poems I knew by heart. Fool's gold made vital to my own sense in a particular moment, when in the spirit of giving all of it away, the poet pressed a jasper arrowhead into my palm. Bumpy and flint-napped, the perfect thing to tuck away in a pocket, from which he produced a different chipped and ancient point, a charm carried close in the recognition of deeper time.
Thank you for that, too. How did poetry come into your life, and why do you think you're a poet rather than a novelist or a short story or a screenplay writer, or for that matter, just to build on that stereotype you're talking about, an engineer or a doctor?
That's a lot of questions. How did poetry come into my life? Mm-hmm. I think that I was always very conscious of language as a young person because my parents are immigrants from Taiwan. And my mother didn't really learn English until she came to this country, and she was in her late 20s. So we have a large cultural and language divide. And so I felt always very hyper-conscious of that attention to language and communication. And I grew up in a community where there weren't a lot of Asian Americans, and the predominant one of the predominant languages was actually Spanish. So I think that this attention to language was always, you know, really deep in my imagination. And for myself, having a mother with whom it was challenging to communicate with in many different ways, poetry for me kind of developed into being this imaginative space in which I really dreamed that it could be a place where my longing to connect with her could be met by creating this third space of language and symbols and imagery in which we could understand each other through this language of poetry. My mother is a visual artist, so, metaphor, symbol, those things make sense to her. And so I think for me as a young person, poetry felt like it could be this liberatory space. I think for myself as an adult now, who's been writing and practicing poetry for a very long time, poetry is very much a artistic practice that relates to voice on the page, but in kind of this speaking experience and cadence. And I think of it as a very political practice as well, to use one's voice to say something that matters. Can you tell me what your other questions were?
Oh, that's good enough for now. You are the civic poet for the city of Seattle. Now, the word civic, to me, is different from poet laureate. I'm thinking that you have responsibilities, or you might perceive yourself as having responsibilities to address civil discourse and just the overall well-being of your community, though I may be jumping ahead and I may be even putting words into your mouth. But what are your words? What does it mean to be civic poet for Seattle? In your case, it could be any city, or even Port Townsend. You come here often enough. Maybe one day you'll be the civic poet for the city of Port Townsend.
So I think the civic poet role, as it was imagined by the city of Seattle and the people that helped to organize the position, many years ago, was really an idea of a poet who could be an ambassador for poetry and poets in Seattle, certainly, as is consistent with any poet laureate role. But I think that the sensibility of Seattle is a little bit different than many other cities. I was poet laureate for the city of Redmond, for instance, previously. But I think that the origins of the role in Seattle, they came about through a program that one of the city council people, I believe it was Nick Licata, was very involved in, and he would invite poets to come and curate poetry and to read poems before city council meetings, if I remember right. And so there was always, I think, this idea of bringing poetry into socio-political spaces where important conversations and civic discourse were taking place. And I think that that is a big part of the way that I think, too, in my own poetics. A lot of my poems are about activism, civil disobedience, critique of the government, critique of social issues. And so those are things that I think are very present and well-matched to my present sensibility. Some of the projects that, I've worked on so far have included curating an event for World Poetry Day with Spanish language speaking poets here in Seattle. I'm now working on a project that will involve writing with unhoused poets who've experienced homelessness. And for me, I'm really interested in voices that aren't commonly heard, making poetry more visual and visible and accessible and approachable to the public in general, and doing that in imaginative ways. Some of my background has been in public art and visual art, and those are the ways in which I'm interested in distributing and circulating poetry in Seattle, not simply in anthologies or the printed page, but doing it in ways that can really engage with people in kind of somatic and physical way that, that brings them into public space and public conversation.
Xinyi Pai is my guest. I'm going to ask you for a poem, a short poem, and then I'm going to ask you about Empty Bowl Press. So short poem, Empty Bowl, and then you made mention in an email about a poem that you've written about Michael O'Connor. I think we'll close with that one after we talk about Empty Bowl. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Sure. This is a poem that is about a place in Seattle called the Mopop Labyrinth. The Mopop is the Museum of Pop Culture, and outside the back of the museum, there is a labyrinth, a contemplative labyrinth that was painted and installed by the artist Trimpin. And it's a really lovely place to visit. I write often about Seattle, so this piece is called Coiling Lines. It would be easier to travel outside the lines or cut directly through the field, to cheat time instead of letting attention unfold at its own pace. At times, the switchbacks resemble a forking maze, the way some paths can lead to nowhere. These trails weren't drawn to be traveled side by side, but we walked them anyway, bumping into bands of tourists, gangs of families stuck fast in the web, their bodies the same as serpentine turns put there to halt the mind that wants to think, I am doing this right. Walking deeper into what was designed to reshape the perceptions, raise regard, to awaken back to heart center.
Thank you for that poem, too. Empty Bowl Press is pretty dear to me personally. It has meandered in and out of my neighborhood for as long as I've lived in my neighborhood. I think we're close to it. And now it's curated by Holly Hughes and John Pierce, who are just down the hill from me. And I want to thank them, actually, for loaning me, or maybe giving me, I guess probably giving me, Virga, one of your books, and No Neutral, the other, which I have read. Well, one must read poems and read poems and read them again and again and again, as I have done. But why Empty Bowl? Why did you choose Empty Bowl? Not a terribly widely known press, but certainly well managed and with a wonderful history for those who know the history. Why did you choose Empty Bowl?
I have always highly regarded Empty Bowl, you know, living here in Washington State. But when I first became aware of the press, it was a period of time in maybe the early 2000s, around maybe like 2007 or 2008, when the poet Mike O'Connor was actually editing the press. He had taken it over from Michael Daly, and he was putting out really wonderful books. I remember him giving me an anthology one time when I came to see him called Working the Land, Working the Sea, that was really about wonderful poets who are from that region of Port Townsend and you know, the general peninsula area. And Mike was a friend, and I always, you know, felt attracted or drawn to the idea of giving him a manuscript at some time and working with him together on a book. And I didn't get to do that. The press kind of changed hands and went back to Michael Daly, and Mike O'Connor passed away a couple of years ago. And so that opportunity never came about. But I think it was always in my mind that Empty Bowl had this very unique and beautiful lineage that my work has often, I felt like, been in conversation with many of those authors, people like Red Pine, Bill Porter, Mike O'Connor, and just the kind of sensibility that those poets have. And so for me, coming to Empty Bowl with my book Virga a couple of years ago, it just felt like a fitting home for some work that I was doing. And so I started a conversation with Michael Daly, and you know, at that time, Empty Bowl hadn't published any Asian American poets, although they had had a deep interest in Chinese classical poets and work in translation. And I was really excited to say, I would like to do this book with you and to just have that opportunity. And so No Neutral is my second book with them, and I'm really happy to continue in that lineage and in that relationship.
Oh, welcome to my neighborhood, which is right down the road from Holly and John, by the way. You probably have been to their home. The poem about Mike O'Connor, you wrote. Let's hear that, and then I'm going to have to say goodbye to you and turn to Catherine.
Rain Shadow from Mike O'Connor. 13 winters past, there was snow here on the ground when you slipped and fell twice while dispensing advice to me. Don't be too heroic. As we walked along the paved trails around the former military compound built on land that belonged to the Sklallam. I am alone today, feeling a bit plucky when I hike the northern trail toward Artillery Hill, seeking out the ruins of warring periods that outlived even you, endured beyond the Chinese truck gardens planted along the estuary and segregated from the sea. Just past the view of the museum down along the water, I look back to see sun coming through the evergreen. See the likeness to the painting that graced the book you made on working the woods and sea farther on before reaching the monuments to important men. I stand in the footprint of the old mess hall where privates disarmed at the end of a day to gather together at ease, remembering you now gone, calling to mind you being laid to rest.
Shin Yi Pai, thank you for joining me on Attention, Please. If you find yourself in Port Townsend, expecting to be in Port Townsend on a Sunday evening, I would love you to join me on Cats and Our Laps, which is my regular Sunday night show. We have poetry, we have conversation, and I bet you could probably even choose some music. So keep that in mind. You know how to get a hold of me. Nice to meet you, and thank you.
Thanks for hosting me.
Okay, bye-bye. Now I have to turn and boo Catherine. Not much time for this. One of the reasons Shin Yi was on with us is she's going to be in your September 10th soiree at Wilderby Farm. Tell us about it, and I will tell you, you have 1 minute to tell me about it.
So, thank you for having me. Poetry on the Salish Sea is at Wilderby Farm. You can get the details at wilderbyfarm.com. And on Sunday at 3 p.m., Shin Yi and two other wonderful poets, Sati Mukherjee and Caitlin Scarano, are going to read. And we've had between 60 and 100 poetry lovers show up for these readings. So bring your camp chairs and blankets, bring your kids and your parents, sun, gardens, friends. We have a really good time. And I think September 10th is going to be a really, really strong reading. So get there early and we'll see you there.
And Catherine, there's music in the background, and that's pretty much the end of your conversation. My apologies for cutting you so short, but such as it goes, I wanted to talk to Shin Yi and would love to have talked to both of you much longer.
It was wonderful to hear Shin Yi.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I asked my guest on Attention, Please, to choose our closing music, and Shin Yi Pai took me up on my offer, choosing With Your Radio On by Tomo Nakayama, and that's what you hear in the background at this point, soon to be in the foreground. My thanks to Claudia Coppola of Olympic Neighbors, Shin Yi Pai for her poems and our conversation, Catherine Hunt for curating poetry on the Salish Sea, and for joining us on Attention Please this afternoon. Attention Please is aired at noon on and at 5 on Mondays and at noon on Saturdays, and is posted as a podcast on KPTZ's podcast page shortly after its first airing. My thanks to you all for listening, and I'm Phil Andrus.